reason the show Breaking Bad was so good is that no matter how dark the plot lines and characters got, and it is harder to go darker than the descent of Walter White from mild-mannered chemistry teacher to homicidal drug lord, the show reliably scattered in moments of humor. Here's Bryan Cranston's Walter White, along with Aaron Paul's Jesse Pinkman, White's partner in crime and another tragic figure, but also a reliable source of tension-breaking dialogue.
You brought those guys out there. This is your responsibility.
Like I came to you begging to cook meth. Oh, hey, nerdiest old dude I know. You want to come cook Crystal? Please. I'd ask my diaper-wearing granny, but her wheelchair wouldn't fit in the RV.
The truth is, if Breaking Bad episodes had only featured the evil and the anxiety, it would have been unbearable to watch. But those small moments where the show injected a bit of absurdity or amusement, they made it possible for viewers to catch their breath and be ready for whatever came next. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Real life is vastly more consequential than prestige TV, of course, but it turns out we can all learn a thing or two from the way the best writers use levity. Carolyn Todd is a freelance health journalist. She wrote about this in a recent article for the New York Times headlined, "When Everything is Heavy, a Touch of Humor Can Help." Carolyn, welcome to Think.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
You open here with a great story about an encounter at a public library in Texas, of all places, that could have ruined everybody's day, but did not. Will you tell us the story Wendy Ahrens shared with you?
Yes. I loved starting the piece with this because I thought it was, you know, kind of sort of mundane, but just a beautiful example of how levity can show up in your daily life. But yeah, Wendy Ahrens, fantastic humor writer, so funny, queen of, you know, turning dark things into something we can laugh at. She was a couple years ago writing at her local library outside of Austin, Texas, working on a book or an essay. And she hears the sound of a really angry voice, just a very upset woman. And, you know, she looks over and she sees that the woman is sort of berating the staff of the library and getting upset about some book policy. And she's getting really angry. And she says she's going to take her kid to another library. And she storms out. And it just leaves this sort of dread in the room, that awful, uncomfortable silence where everyone is upset. And just, oh, gosh, that was so awful. The librarians are upset. So Wendy, Miss Ahrens, being very good at finding the funny in dark moments like this, she gets up and sort of walks into the middle of the library and she says, "Hey, does anybody have the number for this other library? Because I want to call and give them a heads up." And yeah, like we just did, laughter just erupted in the whole room and it broke the tension. The mood lifted. Everyone is like, ah, oh, just a sigh of relief. So it really, I think, showcases how you can lighten the mood in just a moment with a touch of levity.
Sometimes there is a joke involved, but the idea of levity as a mindset is a little more subtle, right? What does it refer to, according to the experts who think this is a good thing for us?
Yeah, a lot of the experts I spoke to conceptualized it as something of a mindset or kind of an emotional style, just more of an approach or a posture, sort of informing the way you move through the world. And so, yeah, it can be a joke sometimes and something more obvious with humor. But the way one of the people I spoke to, Naomi Bogdanis, she's a fantastic researcher at Stanford, professor. She referred to it as navigating the world on the precipice of a smile as opposed to a scowl. And I just loved that because it really shows how, you know, it's a subtle thing, but it's you're looking for it. You're looking for levity. You're looking for the lightness. You're looking for reasons to be delighted or laugh or take things a little less seriously.
It occurred to me reading your piece, you know, I think we've all known unhappy people who are also funny, but it's very rare for somebody with no sense of humor at all to seem happy.
Yeah, I think that's probably a really good point. I think it's having the balance, a little bit of both, because we've all We've all got the darkness, and then we've mostly all got the sense of humor, yeah. But if you can't, if you have an inability to laugh or to find the lighter side, you're gonna have a tough time.
When I think about executives using humor, my mind goes to like the amusing anecdote some CEO might throw into the top of a speech. But you spoke with a lecturer at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford who actually tries to teach business leaders to lead with humor and humanity. What does that look like?
So for them, it's really infusing this more. Business can be a very serious, buttoned up environment, right? Like it's a lot of people taking themselves seriously, trying to get things done and make money and be efficient and do a good job. And the workplace is actually like one of the number one places where that sort of quality of levity and lightheartedness gets sort of socialized out of us. And so it makes sense that some researchers would focus on that as a place to sort of reintroduce that quality, because we spend so much of our time at work. And like anything in an office culture or work environment, it's really a top-down kind of thing. So whatever the leaders, the bosses, the managers are sort of showcasing, that becomes more permissible to everybody else. And so when you've got a leader who can, you know, show a little bit more of a human side or laugh at themselves or just lighten up the mood for a moment in between, you know, a bunch of serious meetings, or be able to laugh at their own mistakes, or just sort of shift perspectives for a second, it sort of gives everybody else some permission to do that. And, you know, levity sort of begets more levity. And yeah, it's a very social phenomenon too.
We should remind folks, you are a health journalist by profession, and it turns out there are actual physiological benefits to finding moments of levity in tough times. First of all, let's start with the opposite. Why is it that emotional stress is bad for our physical bodies?
Yes. So emotional stress, that is something we are all very, very familiar with these days. We feel emotional stress, mental stress, and that does have very profound impacts on our nervous system, on, you know, our digestion. All of these things are connected. It's, you know, the mind-body system. And so when we're not feeling good, our bodies aren't feeling good. You know, you wake up in a bad mood and you just feel kind of heavy, you're tired. These things just go together. And especially in today's world, we have a lot of just constant stress activation. You know, sort of chronic stress is something you'll hear doctors and researchers talk a lot about being a root factor in a lot of diseases. And yeah, so we're constantly activated. Our fight or flight systems are turned on constantly by, you know, an unknown situation or something that's upsetting, but we sort of overinterpret it to be like an actual dangerous threat. And so our bodies get into this state of, you know, just super, super activated stress response, and it's ongoing, and that takes a toll over time. That's something that's meant to, you know, turn on when we need it, like when you're trying to, you know, get out of the way of a car that's moving. But when it's constantly on, that can really start to wear and tear on us, and our nervous systems sort of get a little fried. And since they're connected to pretty much everything in our body, that does have sort of downstream effects on inflammation, on digestion, you know, your heart rate, your blood pressure, all of these things. And so it seems like a small thing, but really connected to everything that's going on in our physical bodies as well.
And it's pretty remarkable, though. There's evidence that moments of levity can affect our physiological stress responses. They can actually make our bodies work a little more as they're intended to.
Yes. Levity and laughter and lightheartedness and humor. There are studies linking, you know, having more of those experiences with all kinds of physical benefits, as far as, you know, heart health or your ability to tolerate pain, how quickly you recover from an illness, your immune functioning, and also more of an in the moment effect. There are experiments showing that when someone has a difficult emotional experience, say they they're very fearful or stressed out, if they can take a moment of levity, that will actually sort of downgrade the stress response more quickly. So that elevated heart rate and that sweating, that will sort of cool down more quickly if you can dose in a little bit of levity and help you return to that more balanced state, that homeostasis where you're not overactivated.
We've probably all had that experience that there is nothing like a genuine belly laugh to redirect us if we happen to be ruminating on something in our lives that's not working very well.
Yes. Laughter in particular has really beautiful effects on the system. It has this capacity to activate the vagus nerve, which is this cranial nerve that's connected to your parasympathetic nervous system. You might hear this referred to as the rest and digest component of your autonomic nervous system, or the tend and befriend component. And it when this is activated, it really just helps us calm down. It helps us sort of open our eyes more to the world around us instead of being so tunnel vision on our thoughts or ruminating. It helps us be more likely to seek out support from other people. So it's this great response, and laughter can help trigger it. It's not the only thing, but it's so accessible. And then one of the other effects that laughter has is it really is able to help, in addition to downregulating that stress response and activating our more, calm, cool, and collected response, it's able to trigger this release of various, neurochemical and hormones. So, you laugh and then you'll see a decrease in cortisol, which is commonly referred to as the stress hormone, and epinephrine, and then you'll also see an increase in the release of things like endorphins and dopamine, which are some more of those feel-good chemicals. So it's really this kind of potent cocktail that you see that happens with laughter.
Many of us have probably also had that experience of like a moment of tension with a partner or a friend that was right on the brink of blowing up. And then one side of the conversation points out something ridiculous and everybody's laughing, and somehow the fight is over.
Yeah, it has this levity, or it has this incredible ability to just sort of puncture the tension and really just flip your viewpoint almost instantly. Something that seemed so serious and so heavy, if you're able to laugh at it all of a sudden, it's just this switch flip, and nothing is actually different. Nothing has changed about the situation. Whatever you were arguing about, is still there. But it really introduces just such a nice needed break.
Is there a relationship, Carolyn, between levity and optimism?
Yeah, I would say so. I think, with optimism, you're looking for the brighter side of a situation, or a reason to be hopeful, or just choosing to see the good instead of the bad. And similarly with levity, it's a lens you're putting on. It's sort of a perspective that you're choosing, and you're looking for the reason to smile, or the reason to take the situation less seriously, the reason to laugh. So I would say absolutely.
And levity, you found, is correlated with life satisfaction, which is really interesting.
It's so funny to think that something so frivolous or superfluous as levity could be correlated with something like that. But yeah, life satisfaction. I mean, what greater variable could there be than how satisfied you are with your life? And I think if you're able to, tough things happen in everybody's lives, no matter who you are, you're going to go through some things. And there's going to be difficult times, and levity doesn't erase that or negate that or sugarcoat any of that. But I think it can reorient your perspective and help you see sort of a fuller picture of your life and, you know, the reasons to laugh or to find things funny, and sort of give you a break from that darkness that we all experience and that we've all been going through, especially lately.
You learned researching for this piece that people who can access levity on a regular basis are less likely to have clinical diagnoses of depression and anxiety. I wonder, though, can psychologists say for sure whether levity prevents these conditions as opposed to the idea that maybe people without depression and anxiety are just maybe a little more adept at finding a bit of lightness in a heavy moment?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's like so many things in health research. You know, you see something you assume is an effect, but it's like, okay, is this person experiencing more levity because they're less depressed, or are they less depressed because they're experiencing more levity? So a lot of the studies that are showing more of a link or an association can't determine whether that's causal or not. But there is some more experimental evidence where, you know, they'll put people through, they'll take a cohort of people and measure their sort of baseline of things like, you know, subjective happiness or symptoms of depression, anxiety. And then they'll put them through something like they call it a humor training program, which is sort of funny, but you know, a structured way to help people experience more humor, find more humor, more levity, more joy. And then they'll measure those variables again at the end of the program, and they do find that people's levels of self-reported depression, anxiety, things like that are decreased. So that would lend some credibility to the idea that the effect could be causal, at least to some degree.
A structured humor training program with, you know, testing on either end doesn't necessarily sound like fun. I will have to take your word for it. But people do, I mean, it's pretty clear that a lot of people are looking for this in their lives.
Yeah, I think we all get to a point where, you know, maybe you wake up one day and you just look around and you're like, gosh, like where has all the lightness in my life gone? Why don't I laugh as much anymore? I think people sense that it's something they need and something they probably used to experience more of because you know, our propensity to laugh tends to decrease with age. And so you can sort of look back and see a younger version of yourself that, you know, maybe experienced things a little more lightly.
We're collecting your stories this hour as well as talking through the research with my guest, Carolyn Todd. We have an email here that says, "When my sister died, everything was this really traumatic blur, especially at the funeral home. But for some reason, the wrong limo was ordered. So we went to my sister's grave in a party limo with LED lights and champagne glasses. And it was truly insane. And we couldn't help but laugh. It was so absurd. And it helped break a really terrible moment." I think we can imagine what that would be like. And you almost can't help but, you know, feel just for a moment, a different thing when something like that happens.
Yeah, I mean, something like that, it's almost like, what choice do you have? You know, like, are you gonna get upset about the wrong limo? You're almost forced to. It's so absurd that you're amid such a heavy situation that you're almost forced to laugh. And that's such a beautiful story, and I'm glad that they were able to laugh.
And this is what experts say we maybe can practice out, just looking for the one thing that might be absurd or out of place or ridiculous. We don't necessarily all have to be comedians to make this work for us.
Absolutely. I think there's maybe a misconception that, you know, people who experience a lot of humor or laugh a lot have to be, you know, quote unquote funny people or comedians. And spoiler alert, not all of us are. And, you know, we're not all joke tellers. We don't all consider ourselves funny people, but we do all have that ability to look for something that we find funny or delightful or amusing. And that is something that you can work on and sort of train over time and get better at.
So many of the stories we're hearing come from times when people felt like they really didn't have control over the biggest, worst thing happening in their lives. And yet, it strikes me that levity in those moments gave them something of a sense of agency, right? The sense that people had control over at least some little aspect of their lives.
Yes, I'm so struck by how it seems all the calls we've gotten so far are about death, which, you know, is like the darkest, hardest thing. And it's, you know, one of those moments when you're feeling the most pain, the most grief. And it's almost, you know, you can fully feel into the grief and all of that and be sort of swallowed up by it. Or you can find just the teeny tiniest bit of levity. And yeah, I think that's really beautiful when people are able to do that.
Experts said, you know, if we don't feel like we're all that funny ourselves, it can be helpful to spend time around folks who sort of already find those funny moments in life. Also, they said we need to find our own voice when it comes to our sense of humor. What did you learn about? What are the four styles of humor?
Yeah. So this is something that I hadn't actually really thought about before the piece. You know, what kind of funny am I? But Naomi Bogdanis and Jennifer Aker, these two fantastic Stanford Business School professors who wrote a book about humor and teach humor to business school students, they've identified four basic main humor styles. So one of them is, you know, they nickname it the stand-up, and it's sort of that more, it's all in the name stand-up, but that sort of bold, irreverent, someone who would, you know, stand up in a crowd and see something kind of humor. And then you've got the one they nickname the sniper, which is the more kind of sarcastic, dry sort of humor. You know, maybe they don't say a lot, but they'll pipe up with that little dig or that little comment. And then they've got the magnet, which is more of like the sort of the talk show host kind of humor, more social, expressive. They've got charisma. And then the fourth one is the sort of the sweetheart style, where it's very sincere. They might make a self-deprecating joke. It's a very sort of social style of humor and sweet, not sort of the opposite of the sniper, maybe.
We have an email here from Tom, who points out some of the greatest comedians ever were people with the worst cases of depression. And as far as I know, Tom is correct about that. I also wonder if maybe some of these people found their way to humor as a way of maybe surviving their depression.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think of the first person I think of is Jim Carrey, who I know, you know, went through so much in his life and experienced some horrible depression and, you know, became one of the funniest people to many of us. And yeah, it's absolutely this incredible coping mechanism that we can use to get through the difficulties, whether, you know, you're just more predisposed to be depressed or you have a lot of difficult things in your life. And so, again, the levity isn't canceling any of that out or sugarcoating any of that. But if it's helping you reevaluate a lousy situation or find a little break in all that darkness and depression, that's really, really valuable. And so I do think those two can naturally go together in a way.
The folks who study humor and its value for our mental health and our social lives think it's important to like include a dose of humor in our media diets. And it's interesting because it's easy to overlook, right? If we're not thinking about it and we've been paying attention to news all day and then we sit down with TV or a movie at night, you know, a lot of them are these dark dramas and tragedies. We might accidentally prime ourselves for a negative outlook where, you know, an old episode of Friends or Cheers or something might be better.
Yeah, it's one of the researchers I spoke to, I can't remember who right now, but sort of referred to the media you consume as more low-hanging fruit to just dose a little bit of comedy in there. You know, it doesn't involve actively trying to look for the levity in a situation or change your perspective. But if you can just expose yourself to more content that will make you laugh or smile or think something is silly or amazing or amusing, that in itself can just, yeah, let you experience that laughter in the moment that has all those physiological benefits we talked about. And then also, yes, as you say, prime you. That's a huge principle in psychology, is this priming effect. Whatever you think you're going to find, and whatever you experience more of, you're going to find and experience more of it. It's this compounding effect. And so if you're able to sort of prime yourself to see things as funny or feel amused with the shows that you watch, why not? And there's a billion things out there. And yeah, it can be really easy to, you know, you start using the algorithm to help find more crime shows or more dramas. And, you know, that's great. And those things have their own value. But yeah, you can get on kind of that track of all dark and heavy. And it can be really helpful to just slip a comedy in there once in a while.
Let it know you want some cat videos.
Yes, let the algorithm know, and it will survive.
How does a levity diary work?
Yeah, so this would be a little journal. You could do a notes app on your phone, where you basically are sort of going back to that priming effect you were talking about. You're on the lookout more for moments of levity in your day, little things that made you laugh, or just small reasons to smile, things that you might miss if you weren't on the lookout for them, and if you weren't intentionally savoring them by, you know, recording them. And you can do this at the end of the day, you can do it throughout the day, but it just helps you savor that moment more and appreciate it more. And then one of the researchers I spoke to recommended even, you know, flipping back through your levity diary at the end of the week or something, and just letting yourself laugh and see, oh, that was pretty funny, and just get more appreciation out of those moments. And then, yeah, that helps build your capacity to find more and more of them.
You've written previously about your experience with chronic illness, which can be, you know, full of unpleasant surprises all the time. Is humor something, levity something that you've used to help you cope?
Yeah, and more so recently, just in the last year, actually, I had a friend who, you know, was, I think, maybe bold or daring enough to make a couple jokes about my illness. I've got type 1 diabetes, and you know, it's usually something that people don't want to go there, don't want to offend, or, you know, make light of something so serious. But actually, someone being able to joke about it, to me, just makes it less serious. And yeah, that's been a very helpful tool for me, is being able to laugh.
Carolyn Todd is a freelance health journalist. Her recent article for the New York Times was headlined, "When Everything is Heavy, a Touch of Humor Can Help." Carolyn, this has been really interesting. Thanks so much for making time to talk with us.
Oh, this has been so much fun, and I've loved hearing everybody's stories. Thank you so much, Chris.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, and you can subscribe to our podcast free wherever you get podcasts. Just search for KERA Think, or go to our website, think.kera.org, and listen to the podcast, sign up for our newsletter, and hear about upcoming shows we're planning. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.